Time for another edition of the Sport Diehards with your host, Steve Itzkowitz.
Hello, Sport Diehards. Welcome to another edition of the Sport Diehards. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. We're being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill. As usual, football extravaganza. I got to tell you, sometimes things get moved around for a reason. Usually the show happens on Monday, but we moved it to Friday. Why? Because, well, we like to get freaky on Friday with our sports talk. You know what I'm saying? What better day to do that than Friday? But also, look what's happened since Friday. Arguably the greatest football championship game in the history of college football. We'll be talking about that. For the second consecutive year, an NFL team is relocating to the same spot as the team relocated to last year, ironically enough. There was also a couple of head coaching hires in the NFL and a whole lot more, and we're going to get into all of it tonight over the next 90 minutes. It is going to be a rip, rock, and roll show. You're going to stand up for the first 5 minutes, and then eventually you're going to find yourself rolling around in laughter as well as in information that you could use to make some money this weekend if you choose to, because we're going to have it for you. And I have for you a very special guest, a new member to the Radio AFS family. He is of a sports show called Sports Elite, if I'm saying that. Yep, Sports Elite. And his name is Tay Holloway. Tay, welcome to the show. Welcome to Sport Diehards, and welcome to Radio AFS. How are you, sir?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you inviting me, and I'm just ready to talk. I'm ready to give you some sports, some debates, some facts, and just have a great time with you tonight.
All right. Well, like I said, this week, for the second consecutive year, an NFL team is relocating. The San Diego Chargers, you know, San Diego Superchargers. Mm-hmm. Well, San Diego Superchargers about to fly away and establish now they're going to have to say Los Angeles Superchargers, because they are heading to the City of Angels. And a city that might not give him an angelic welcome, because the Chargers in L.A. have about as much stature as Jack Nicholson might have in a town like Podunk, Oklahoma.
Yep.
You know, kind of an odd mix there. But the Chargers are taking their act on the road, and they are moving to Los Angeles, where they will become the Los Angeles Chargers. And there's much debate. Should they have gone? Did they have a choice? How well are they going to do in L.A., especially when you consider that they are second team in after the Los Angeles Rams moved in last year. And, of course, they have an established fan base, unlike the Chargers do, at least at this point. And they're going to be playing their first couple of years at the StubHub Center, which is not exactly your typical NFL venue. It only seats 30,000 people. When asked for Roger Goodell for a comment, Roger Goodell was too shocked to actually answer the question, because he couldn't fathom an NFL game with only 30,000 people at it. But I digress.
Yep.
nonetheless, Tay, you've heard the news, and I'm sure you've been following it as closely as I do. I've certainly got some things to say about this as far as let's talk about why they left San Diego and what may happen to them in L.A. going forward. Why did they leave San Diego, considering how badly they wanted to stay and how much time and how much stalling they did and how much going back and forth? What do you think ultimately led them to leave San Diego to head to L.A.?
Well, I think this. They left San Diego because, one, the fans there didn't support the team. They have a blackout every home game because nobody was going to the stadium and buying tickets. They couldn't sell no tickets. They could put them in Happy Meals, and they could not get nobody to come. Why? Because of the poor product they've had on the field the last few years. Yeah, you have Phillip Rivers, but that's it. He's the face of that franchise. You have to give people something to want to spend their hard-earned money to come and see. You didn't have that. This year was a piss-poor year for them. I mean, they couldn't really play offense. They couldn't play defense for worth nothing. Special teams was ranked in the bottom tier in football. So you mean to tell me that you want these fans in San Diego to come out there year after year after year to spend $100 on a ticket, and they're looking at a losing team that's getting blown out? That's why they had to move. And it was a bad move to go to Los Angeles because they don't have a fan base there. It made more sense to me to have the Raiders go back to Los Angeles because they used to be the L.A. Raiders. The Chargers, no. You're going to a venue that has 30,000 seats. That's the smallest venue in the NFL. That's a college venue. That's not going to cut it. They're still going to be losing money. And the way that the Chargers are going, they're going to end up folding. They don't have the support. They're better off rebranding themselves, get rid of the Chargers name, and start over fresh. Just like, remember when the Browns left and went to Baltimore? They rebranded themselves. That's what the Chargers need to do.
Well, if they rebrand themselves, I think they should rename themselves to the L.A. Surfer Boys, because if there's one thing San Diego is known for, it's some really excellent surfing at Mission Beach. I got to tell you,
yep.
I mean, that's, you know, maybe that could be the new town, mm-hmm. you know, sport town, because Lord knows the San Diego Padres, a Triple-A team being allowed to play in Major League Baseball because there's no current relegation rule for really bad teams like you do in the British Premier League of soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they should rename themselves the L.A. Surfer Boys. Boy, that would catch on real quick. Of course, that wouldn't be a scary enough name for a football team. Hmm?
It would, but it wouldn't. But their surfing team, they win an Olympic gold medal in surfing. So, hey, they're doing better than the Chargers.
You know, my thing is this, Dean Spanos acted like a welfare case in that he was asking the city to approve a finance plan to help him build a stadium. And I got to tell you, the reason why they're leaving San Diego is because they couldn't build the stadium. And that's the thing. If you're an NFL mm-hmm. team these days, it doesn't matter how you play. It matters where you play, what facility you play
mm-hmm.
in. You know, that's a priority. I think there's a direct correlation between teams that have new stadiums and not playing particularly well because it's more about the stadium than it is about the team. Just
mm-hmm.
ask the, you know,
Minnesota Vikings.
These teams with new
Minnesota
stadiums,
Vikings.
And they're not. I mean, look at the Minnesota Vikings. They have a new facility, and they nosedive this year, mostly
mm-hmm.
under injury. But nonetheless, it's a game. I call it a game of stadiums. You know, it's a game of stadiums, like a Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is nobody actually gets killed. But people do get
That's
their
right.
heart broken. And, you know, Charger fans haven't had much root to the Chargers have been very banged up. They've been very injury prone. Theoretically, they have a decent team. But when I think of the Chargers, I think of the 2006 Chargers that went 14-2, lost the divisional
mm-hmm.
playoffs to the New England Patriots, fired Marty Schottenheimer, and then hired Norv Turner. In a power
yep.
struggle between Marty Schottenheimer and A.J. Smith, A.J. Smith won, like Trent Baalke won against Jim Harbaugh when the Niners fired him 4 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
the franchise has started nosediving. And then Mike McCoy comes in, seemingly writes everything for the first couple of years. And now he can't hold on to a job, even though their injury situation was a big part of what's happened to them the last couple of years. So the Chargers moving to L.A. is very interesting to me. It feels like a move they needed to make financially to increase the value of their franchise. But man, oh man, oh man, they're going to have to work like the Dickens. They're going to have to be Hollywood. They're going to have to beg like your average person at the base of a freeway in a poorer area of L.A., begging for people to pay attention to them, because it's going to be an uphill battle to build a fan base here. And the Rams are maybe the best, maybe come out the best in this. So now the Rams could say they're not the only mediocre team in town.
Yeah.
So I think the Chargers had to do it financially, but they're in an uphill battle to build a fan base. Go ahead, Ty.
There are. And you know what? I want to piggyback off the stadium thing and then on the Rams. The stadium thing, yes, it is about who has the best stadium. If you notice, the next two Super Bowls after this year is going to be in brand new stadiums. One, Minnesota. To the new Superdome that's open next season. Now, this year I went to see my Cowboys play in Minnesota. I took my father up there for his birthday. He's a Minnesota fan, and I saw my Cowboys barely win up there. That stadium is state of the art. I understand why they want to bid for the
mm-hmm.
Super Bowl. You know,
sure.
And I'm going this year, you know, next year to see my Cowboys play at the Superdome because we play Atlanta next year in Atlanta to see that new dome. If you notice, when the Cowboys opened the new AT&T Center, that next year, what do they have? A Super Bowl. They're putting all the big money events like the Super Bowl in the new stadium. So these owners, they want a piece of that pot. They want some of that revenue. Why not? That's a nice piece of change in your pocket. So like the Chargers, perhaps, they can't host a Super Bowl in that stadium that's over 30,000 years old. I mean, a stadium that's older than me. I'm 32. I'm just saying, they can't host it. So what? That owner wants extra revenue, just like everybody else. So he wants the city to say, hey, at least meet me halfway. The city of San Diego couldn't even meet him halfway. They just wanted to build a mediocre stadium. That's a nice way for me to put it. They want to do a new stadium, but not state of the art. Not something that they would hold a Super Bowl in. You know, the Super Bowl, you have to have at least 90,000 seats. Well, the San Diego Charter Stadium that they were proposing to build only had 65,000 seats. That's sorry for NFL. When you got
but Tay, I have to correct.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to correct you. That's not a stadium down in San Diego. It's an oversized landfill. But you go ahead.
Oversized landfill. You're right about that. But when you – these new stadiums now in the modern day, they're hosting 100,000 seats. And they have space to put in extra if they need. So you telling me that you think you're going to host a Super Bowl with less than 100,000 seats? That's more money for the NFL, TV, and the owner's pocket. So that's why L.A., well, the Chargers moved. Now, to piggyback on the Rams, what you talked about, I think the Rams are in better shape. Why? Look at the new coaching hires they have. Wade Phillips, one of the great defensive mind coaches right now in the NFL. The Rams had one of the top defensive lines last year. They just didn't have an offense at all. The offense couldn't score nothing, not even get in field goal range. But the defense could play. So you get Wade Phillips out there, and then you have Sean McVay, who's coming over from the Redskins, who was their offensive coordinator this year, to help develop Jared Goff and the rest of that offense and get him aligned. It's not going to be an overnight thing. I said give them at least two seasons. The Rams are going to bring something to L.A. for them to cheer about like they used to cheer for the Showtime Lakers. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, that's great to know. And actually, I want to get the take of this next gentleman on the line here. Calling in, also a new member of the Radio AFS family and a host of the show known as the Combat Sports Show. So we're going to duke it out with this gentleman here, Mr. Brian Zamora. Brian, welcome to Sport Diehards. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing just great. We've been talking about the Chargers being, you know, mm-hmm. the second consecutive team to relocate to Los Angeles. Talking about why they left San Diego and how they might do in L.A. to move things along. So we have a couple on the line now. Now the Chargers are moving into very uncharted territory for them. They only have 1 year of history, and that was back in the 60s. How do you think the Chargers are going to fare in L.A., particularly in the first couple of years playing at the StubHub Center?
You know, I don't think this is going to be a great move for them. They're getting, like they said, a new stadium. They're going to get some fans. But L.A. teams, you know, you have to prove yourself in L.A. to really get that fan base to follow you and to be loyal to you. And I don't think the Chargers have ever done that. I don't know that they're going to be able to do that. I like the Chargers. I like what they have. But they should have worked on their team rather than their stadium, is what I think.
These Spanos need to generate $175 million more. That's what he was short on building the stadium down here with the NFL deal. Even San Diego State was going to kick in some money. It's hard to believe what a billionaire can't build his own stadium these days, but that was the case with Dean Spanos, who asked for the public for help, and Californians are saying, we don't need you to we don't need to build you a new stadium, billionaire. Build it yourself. It's the only place to be a billionaire. Because not many people can relate to you. But, it's a great point, Brian. And let's see here. You have two mediocre football teams in town now. Yeah, the Chargers have been injury prone. But even before those injuries, you know, were they getting the playoffs? Yes, but it's not like they were making deep runs. And you have the Rams, who are like a top-heavy team with a really good defense and a really lousy offense. With the Chargers, you don't quite know what you have because they keep getting bit by the injury bug, which maybe they should examine their strength and conditioning program, because you can minimize the chance of injuries occurring. I know they just happen, but at the end of the day, you can minimize them if you go through proper strength and conditioning routine. So which team do you think is going to – I mean, the Rams have an established fan base, and the Chargers are kind of coming in as the redheaded stepchild. But which team, by the time the new stadium is built and ready to go in 2019, which team do you think is going to win the hearts and minds first of the city of – the whole city of Los Angeles in terms of the football team that people will be most interested in? Let me go ahead and start with you, Tay. Okay.
The Rams.
Why do you think that is?
And I say that because the Rams used to be there. It's some old fans there who's been wishing, hoping, and praying that the Rams come back. You know, they started being fans of them when they were the L.A. Rams. The Rams are going to do it.
Fair.
They have already the fan base is there. They followed them in St. Louis, and they're following them back to L.A. They have the foundation there with their defense. I really believe the defense wins championships. They have a defense there, you know, with Aaron Donald, Quinn, on that line that can generate pressure that causes havoc to other opposing teams' offense. They have Wade Phillips now, you know, his schemes are great. They run a 3-4. He blitzes a lot. That's what they already was doing, but it doesn't have any guidance, you know, because they're so young of a team. The Rams, and
you
like
know,
I said before, give them 2 seasons.
Right.
Give them 2 seasons. I'm not going to say it's next season. Give them 2 seasons to let them develop because they got a brand-new coach and a new head coach and a defensive coordinator. It's going to take some time. 2 seasons, they should at least be in the NFC West, at least be competing for a division title, at least.
Well, they better be, because to sell those personal seat licenses, I mean, you think it was tough to get a stadium built in San Diego for the public to assist with public funds to build a stadium? L.A. is a whole different story. It's a whole different ballgame. So, yeah, Tay, your prediction is pretty much the expectation that the Rams are better be respectable in the next couple of years and be a playoff contender, if not a playoff team. Otherwise, selling the PSLs and that beautiful new Taj Mahal, you know, what good is a Taj Mahal if no one stops by to admire it? All right, so that's
the Rams
are going to have to build up to that. And, you know, they have Wade Phillips, but one thing I would caution, Wade Phillips is 70 years old. He's not getting any younger, so who knows how much time he has left, you know, coaching in the NFL, much less in life. And I don't mean to sound morbid about it, but that's the reality of the situation. He is a great defensive coordinator, maybe the best in football right now, but he's not getting any younger. So you better rake hay while the sun shines, while you have someone like him in the fold to run your defense and get that offense going, especially by the time that stadium is built, because if not, there's going to be a lot of wasted opportunities and a whole lot of regrets. Brian, let me ask you the same question. Which team do you think is going to win the hearts and minds of the city of L.A. by the time the new stadium is up and running in 2019, the Rams or the Chargers?
I'm going with the Rams also, because they have the history. They have a very good history in L.A. Like Tay said, they had the fans. The fans remember when they were in L.A. last. They remember this. The San Diego's coming in. You said they were there for 1 year prior in the 60s? Yeah, nobody remembers that. I mean, people do, but not enough. They're bringing in the new fan base. It's not going to do it. It's just not going to be the loyal fan base that the Rams still have there. The Rams never they never lost it. You know, it's just the Rams are going to be that city's baby. Just like the Dodgers are that city's baby, the Rams are going to be it, and they're going to continue to be it. And I even think I like Tay's prediction, 2 years. Give them 2 years. I think that's a great prediction. But even if they don't do great in 2 years, it doesn't matter. You love your team. You love your team no matter what. I think it's going to stay that way.
Well, the one chance that the Chargers have, just to play devil's advocate for a moment here before we move on to the next topic, talking about Sean McVay's hire with the Rams and Anthony Lynn's hire with the Chargers, is one chance the Chargers have is that in the city of L.A., you know, I make the joke that when the Lakers won the 2010 NBA Finals, they won Game 7 against Boston, 83-79, maybe the ugliest finals game I'd ever seen in my entire life. I mean, just just piss poor offense all throughout the game, and the Lakers were slightly less poor than the Celtics were. I ended up winning that game, and I said no Laker fan cares how bad this game was offensively because we won a championship, got revenge against Boston in the process. But that's the exception to the rule. For the most part in L.A., we like offense out here. You know, that's just the way it goes. It's the wild, wild west, wide open offense, a lot of points, a lot of touchdowns, and so on and so forth. That's where the Chargers have a shot these next 2 years because they, when they're healthy, have much better offensive personnel than the Rams do right now. And you said 2 years, Kay, but in that 2 years that they are developing Jared Goff for figuring out that he's not the guy, the Chargers have the chance to score some points and play very entertaining games of football and possibly be a playoff team. If they can score the ball and be entertaining, unlike the Rams, I mean, when the Rams lost, they just looked ugly in losing and that they didn't look good even in losing. Kind of the Lakers have looked good in a lot of losses this year because they've scored a lot of points. So they've been at least somewhat entertaining. That's the Chargers' best bet over these next couple of years is to be really good offensively, which they can be, which the personnel that they have, while the Rams are developing their 2-3 year plan with Sean McVay, with Jared Goff and everybody, and you know, trying to find a number one receiver that you know, can take the top off of defense. That's the Chargers' best bet. Is that fair to say, Tay?
I think it's fair to say. I also believe that the two teams are flip-flop. Chargers offense, Rams defense. You know, those are their two best bets on each side. If Phillip Rivers, if you can build, give him some receivers. Right now, this is me, he doesn't have the receivers around him other than Antonio Gates and Henry, this is rookie tight end this year, to actually be receiving threats. Those are tight ends. Where are your big wide receivers? You know, you got Williams who came from the Browns, but he's just a stretch guy like DeSean Jackson, kind of in the same, you know, receiver category. You got to build some around him. He doesn't have a run game for real because, what, Gordon got hurt. Danny Woodhead got hurt. He doesn't have an offensive line. If you give him an offensive line that can protect him and make him stop being one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the NFL, he actually can make something out of nothing. Give him a chance because he's a gunslinger. You know, I believe in Phillip Rivers, but he doesn't have a supporting cast to help him. Also,
well, he's got Keenan Allen news.
I don't believe in Keenan Allen. I don't believe in Keenan Allen because
if he could stay healthy, he's a really good receiver. He just can't seem to stay
healthy.
There you go. That's his problem.
There you go. That's what I was going to say. He can't stay on the field. And so that's why I don't believe in him because it seems like every time he gets hit, he's out for a few games. That's not helping Rivers.
Yeah. It's true. We'll see what happens, but I'll tell you, to watch these two teams, you know, develop to win the hearts and minds of Los Angelinos everywhere, and Orange County as well, you know, while the new stadium is being built, it's going to be fascinating to watch, and I think this competition will bring out the best of both teams. Even though it's two mediocre teams right now, they can bring out the best of each other, trying to win the City of Angels, like the Lakers and the Dodgers and the Kings have already dealt with the success they've had. Winning championships. The Rams hired Sean McVay, a man with the pedigree of a football guy, being around the Gruden family, John and Jay Gruden. John Gruden was his mentor, and of course, he was mentored by Bruce Allen. He used to be a general manager with the Washington Redskins, who brought McVay onto staff under Mike Shanahan and under Jay Gruden before he left. And of course, John McVay was the vice president of football operations for the successful 49ers teams of the 80s and the 90s. So he has a pedigree, and he's very passionate, as you learn from his press conference, but he's also only 30 years old, and no one has asked this question. I'm going to both of you. Is he too young to succeed? Because there's an unwritten rule in football, I believe, that you never hire a head coach that is younger than the oldest player on your team. No one's actually said it, but I'm just going to point it right here. So is Sean McVay just too young to succeed as a head football coach at 30 years of age? Brian, let me start with you.
Definitely not. You know, it doesn't matter how old you are. If he's grown up in a football family, that's all that matters. You know, you don't have to be 40, 50 years old to know football. If you play, and you don't even have to play very good, but some of the best coaches are not good players. You know, there's exceptions to that, but, you know, did Sherman, Mike, no, the guy who used to coach the Colts, great football players and great coaches, but not, you don't have to, like, you just don't have to be good at something to be a good coach. And age, no problem. You can be young and be very, very knowledgeable.
Well, and I'll get my comments on that in a second. Taylor, let me ask you the same question. Is he too young to succeed, or are you with Brian, and that age doesn't matter?
Yeah, no, he's not. He's not too young, and I believe that because age doesn't dictate your level of understanding of the game and the scheme. You know, you can learn that. You know, he's 30 years old, I'm 32. I've learned the same level of, you know, defensive scheme, offensive scheme, stuff like that. If you learn the basic concepts and the schemes of what you're running, and you're running well, just like he did his offense and with the Redskins the last 2 years, he deserves a shot. And so, no, he's not too young. He's only going to get better. And he's a longer career because he's younger.
My thing is this. He's got a, you know, what he lacks in experience, he makes up for in passion. He's got a good football acumen. And, oh, by the way, he's an offensive guy that the Rams absolutely need. And so I'm going to reserve judgment in the meantime. We'll see how it works out. But I'm also a 49ers fan, so hopefully he falls flat on his face, mostly because of the Rams just being the mediocre franchise that they've been for a day and age now. But I think the acumen is there. The passion is definitely there. And the passion will go further than anything else in life. The experience is going to come because the passion puts it in a position to get that experience, and certainly he was hired for a reason. So I'm reserving judgment at this point. He's doing nothing but a number, as Aaliyah once said. So I say if you're a Rams diehard, be realistic, give him a chance. Don't be the fickle and patient L.A. boob fan. You know, give it time, give it patience, because at the end of the day, this is a process, and everyone has to go through this process, no matter how much you might not like it or not. But I think he's got a shot to be successful because of that faction and because of the acumen that he's developed from the mentorship he's gotten from people that have been very successful in football at a high level, or people that have built Super Bowl winning teams like his father, or have coached Super Bowl winning teams like his mentor John Gruden. And certainly Jay Gruden has proven to be a very good NFL head coach after going to the Washington Redskins once RG3 left the team and freed up Jay Gruden to actually coach the team and not worry about one player that was beloved by the owner more than anybody else loved him. But I digress. Then you come to the other side, Anthony Lynn, offensive coordinator. And by the way, there's someone, there's a lot of background noise going on. Or any of you at a house or at a place where there's a lot of people nearby talking? Try to control it or maybe move around a little bit to where that noise is not so prevalent. But on the other side, Anthony Lynn was hired by the San Diego Chargers away from the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills were expected to make him their head coach, but apparently what happened to the Bills in Week 17 scared the Bills away from them, and they decided to hire Sean McDermott instead. So Anthony Lynn is going west to San Diego, which I think is a way better deal than coaching in Buffalo, if you ask me. To coach the San Diego Chargers, like Sean McVay, he is an offensive guy, but he's 48 years old, so he's been around a little bit longer. You know, Mike McCoy was an offensive guy, and he couldn't quite get it done in San Diego. Why might it be different with Anthony Lynn taking over for Mike McCoy with the Chargers? Let me start with you, Tay.
I really don't see a difference taking over for the Chargers because they still have the same issues with the personnel who's going to be on the field. I think it's going to be the same scenario unless when free agency and the draft come up, they address some of their needs, basically. You know, their primary needs, not like the secondary, like the offensive line is a primary need. That's what I think. I don't think it's a difference.
Well, I think the one thing, and Brian, let me ask you the same question. I mean, do you expect it to be any, how could it be different with Anthony Lynn as opposed to Mike McCoy? if anything.
Dude, that one, I don't even have an answer for that. I don't know enough about those two guys.
You know, I'll help you guys out a little bit here. The one thing, you know, you hear a lot of these head coaches these days, these offensive head coaches being quarterback whisperers. Anthony Lynn is a ground-and-pound guy. He's a guy that wants to run the football. And so that's where I think Mike McCoy, you know, more of a aerial kind of head coach. Anthony Lynn is a guy that believes in a rushing, in a running game. You got a pretty good running back in Melvin Gordon, who showed flashes last year of what he's capable of coming out of the University of Wisconsin. And you mentioned Danny Woodhead before, Dave. If he's ever healthy, surely he can help a team out because he's very professional.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a good job catching, running, and blocking. He does all the things you would want a guy like that to do. So I think with Anthony Lynn, I think he's going to build his offense specifically around a ground-and-pound type of game, to build an offensive line that is going to allow for that to happen and to protect Phillip Rivers from getting hit too much. Because you mentioned before that he's one of the more sacked quarterbacks in the NFL. He's also been turnover prone. When he's under pressure, he's prone to trying to squeeze it into places where he shouldn't, turning the ball over. But when he can sit back in the pocket and dissect the defense and be given the time to do that, he's as good as it gets in that situation. So I think Anthony Lynn is ground and pound, and his passion for the ground and pound game is going to build an offensive line and a running game that is going to protect Phillip Rivers and maximize Phillip Rivers' effectiveness in the passing game and maybe make the Chargers a little bit more balanced, because to me, in the last couple of years especially, you know, yeah, the offensive line has had their injury issues, but they haven't been very balanced in that. It seems like they're passing way more than they're running, and that's just not a successful formula. That's just not a formula for success in the NFL. So I think they'll have a more balanced attack under Lynn, with more of an emphasis on ground and pound and offensive line, which will protect Rivers and make them that much more effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a question for you.
Feel free to respond if you wish. Yeah.
I got a question for you. Now, you know, you said it's injury issues on the offensive line. Do you think it's a lack of talent? Like, they can upgrade?
No.
But I think it's a lack of talent.
I don't. I don't think it's a lack of talent. I think I'll – you know, players that play in the NFL have talent. Let's just establish that. What you need are guys that are healthy and have good character, that do what they need to do. You know, and I hate to stereotype it or speak so generally, but everyone in the league's got talent. If you're a starting offensive lineman, you're talented enough to do that. You have to have cohesion. You have to have chemistry. You know, it's like a bottle of hot sauce with no hot sauce in it. There's something missing. You know, they don't have the hot sauce. You know, the hot sauce consistency, a really good piece of chocolate cake, that consistency from beginning to end, where it just hits your palate, delights you all the way to the very, very end. They don't have that consistency of playing with each other to make that sweet, sweet music of offensive linemen pounding on a defensive line. And when we talk about the Green Bay Packers and Dallas Cowboys game momentarily, we're going to talk about the key to winning in the NFL playoffs and why that will explain the pick that I'm going to make to both of you. But they need that consistency. They need that chemistry. They need that sweetness, you know, of bonding together. They need that chemistry. You know, that makes for that makes for a really, really good knuckle sandwich against the opposing team. So I don't think it's talent. I think it's more they need to be healthy and they need to come together as a unit. And I think Lynn is going to emphasize that. And if the team is healthy, look out, because I think the talent is there on both sides of the ball. But we'll see. Obviously, injuries are
we'll see.
You know, hard to predict.
We'll see. I think they can upgrade at the right tackle and a left guard position. Yes, those guys are talented for the NFL, but when you get to the NFL, you got people that are more elite than the most talented person that's there. So, you know, I'm thinking like they can upgrade at different parts, because it's no reason for Phillip Rivers to be the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. I'm just saying.
Fair enough. And you know, that's something the Chargers could do. Lord knows they don't need a quarterback. They don't need a running back. So I think in their draft this year, they might emphasize offensive line or maybe a wide receiver, a wide receiver, you know, in case Keenan Allen goes down with an injury again. So we'll see what they do. But there are certain things they don't need and certain things they do need. Maybe that's the direction that they will go in. It's 8:04 p.m., and I want to remind you guys that Radio AFS is a full-fledged network of different types of sports shows. Brian Zamora is going to host the Combat Sports Show, which is going to be a lot of stuff on fighting and MMA, along with Tay Holloway of Sports Elite. We also have the Fallout Shelter on Tuesday night with A-Bomb. It's a show about talking trash. So if you want a show that will make you feel like a landfill at the end of it, filling you up with more trash that should be allowed by law, you want to listen to the Fallout Shelter. And then Stay Out of My Crease Wednesday nights, show hosted by Kim Dunning about hockey. Yes, we have a hockey show. We have a hockey show. We have an MMA show. We have my show that goes into football, basketball, and baseball primarily. We've got Sports Compact and even a wrestling show that might be coming up here. So it's a full-fledged network. Go to RadioAFS.com to check out the show listings and the times that they occur, or Facebook.com/RadioAFS. This is a very unique network with a lot of great sports programming for the mainstream sports fans to the sports fans that are more niche fans like your MMA fans or your hockey fans. We have something for everybody. So go to RadioAFS.com or sports or Facebook.com/RadioAFS and you'll see exactly what I mean. It may be the most diversified sports talk network in the entire podcast universe with Radio AFS. And I'm proud to be a part of it. I'm proud to have Tay Holloway and Brian Zamora doing their first show on Radio AFS with me. I hope you guys are enjoying it so far. I love having you on here at this point.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get into the NFL divisional playoffs at this point because I was going to touch on wildcard weekend, but really the only thing to touch on is that it was revenge of the home team and that the home teams bitch slapped some of these away teams, like the away teams bitch slapped some of the home teams from last year. All the home teams won, so not a lot of upsets to talk about. So let's get into the NFL divisional playoffs. One big game in particular that I know you guys want to sound off on, the Green Bay Packers and the Dallas Cowboys, the hottest team versus the best team. This is what heavyweight fights are made of, and this is what football dreams are all about. This is why grown men like us like having sports talk radio shows, because watching these teams try to kill each other, knowing that we can wake up and walk normally the following day, because these teams are going to go at each other harder than Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor to go at each other if they get together for an MMA fight. It's going to be epic. So I'm going to start with you, Tay. How do you see this? I mean, what do you think the key – how do you see this game going? Or give us your assessment of the game from a preview standpoint as to what you expect.
Okay, well, from what I expect, when we played earlier this season, I said on my show, I said the way that the Cowboys can win is that we keep their most prized possession on the bench. Why? Because he can't hurt you on the bench. You know, that's just like – kryptonite. That's his kryptonite. If you keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline, on the bench, sipping water, keeping warm, he cannot hurt you. And you have to take care of the ball. You can't have all those, you know, fumbles and interceptions and stuff like that. You can't have that. You can't give him extra possession. Why? Because that gives him an extra time to slice you. I'm still not a believer in our defense, even though our pass rush has been getting pressure the last 4 weeks of the season, which, hey, if you get hot in, you know, in the NFL, you know, at the end, usually those teams go on to win. But if we can run the ball effectively like we did, we played them early in the season, we almost had 200 yards rushing on that, at that time, the number one run defense in the league, we will win the game because we will dominate the time of possession. We would dominate converting on third down. We would dominate scoring. And we would keep Rodgers on the bench and give him the least amount of possessions. And guess what? We have to stop the run on defense. Right now, the Cowboys finish the season as the number three ranked rush defense in the NFL. Nobody was running on us all season. We haven't given up a 100-yard rusher all season. The Packers does not have a rusher that can do that. At least they haven't presented that this season. Yeah, Christine Michael, they got him. He hasn't really did too much to me. Ty Montgomery, he's had a good season. You know, he had like one or two games that he ran over 100 yards, but he's a wide receiver. They basically ran out of the Wildcat. Basically, they don't have it. They are passing over 60 times the last two games. They're one-dimensional. So if the Cowboys can make some plays in the passing game and stop them from running the ball, I feel very good that they can win this game. But I respect Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is, I believe, and this is just me being subjective, he's the great, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, because without Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers will be a top three team in the draft right now, next to the Browns and the 49ers. I'm just saying, I'm just being honest right here. You know, non-homerish, but that's how much he means to that team. I really think he deserves the MVP because they haven't lost since he went on ESPN in front of all of the reporters and said they were running the table. He hasn't lost. But if teams haven't kept him on the bench, if we can keep him on the bench, they're going to lose. If we don't, we're going to lose. And that's all I got to say right now. I got to see what my counterpart going to say.
Well, before I bring him in, I just want to say that if you keep Rodgers on the sideline long enough, you can also admire those supersized big screen TVs that AT&T Field has and start to wonder if his living room is big enough to fit one of those TVs into it. Brian, I know that that you're throwing fudge for the fudge packers here. going up against the Cowgirls. Sorry, I had to get that in. So, yeah, it's Cowgirls versus Fudge Packers. That sounds a lot more fun than Cowboys versus Packers. Sounds kind of dull. So, but, Brian, I know that you are riding the Packers bandwagon here, so to speak. So, going counter what Tay said, what do you expect out of this game and what the Packers have to do to win this game?
Okay, well, first of all, when you said the best team versus the hottest team, I have no idea how the Packers are going to play themselves on Sunday. That's just me.
Whoa.
But
I need a bell on that one.
The Packers, like Kay said, Packers have to win by keeping Aaron Rodgers on the field. And by doing that, what they have to do, simple. They have to have some kind of a run through it because Aaron Rodgers cannot throw every damn pass, every down. That's the recipe for interception, give us the ball, they look around off the clock, they don't have a spectacular runner. They lost their wide receiver last week with two broken ribs. It's going to be a rough game. I think that. I'm not saying they can't win. Definitely can't. Rodgers is what? 24 touchdowns and zero interceptions in 8 games?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
That is pretty damn impressive. But I'm also counting here Dak Prescott. He has looked great. Okay, don't get me wrong. I like the guy. And I don't like many Cowboys. I like this guy. Problem is, this is his first playoff game.
Well, how do you not like a guy named Dak? His
name
is Dak. How do you not like a guy with a name of Dak? Seriously, isn't that one of the coolest names you've ever heard? Like Dak. Who Dak? Dak.
No, no,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut it off, but I just love the name, like Dak. That may be the best part of this game. Every time the name Dak Prescott is said, you know, it's like Matthew Dellavedova. You just love hearing a name like that, you know.
Dellavedova.
No, it's great. It's just he's had a week off to stew to get, you know, nervous. He's they say they're going to rest. We know for a fact these teams, a lot of teams come in after a week off flat. Those Cowboys, I really, really hope, are going to come in flat. Prescott's going to be nervous. He's going to make mistakes, which he hasn't really done all year. He's going to start making mistakes. We're going to get some turnovers. Excuse me there. We're going to get some sacks. We're going to put a lot of pressure on Dallas. And you're going to see – basically what you're going to see is Green Bay showing why they're going to win the Super Bowl this weekend.
I gotta say something on that. Okay, you said they're gonna win a Super Bowl. I doubt that. The reason is Dallas Cowboys have a massive offensive line. You know, they have an offensive line that pancaking the whole defensive line. You know, if you saw that last play of the game when they played the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh, basically when Zeke ran in, the offensive line pancaked that whole defensive line. When they went to Green Bay, when they were 3-point underdogs. All they did the whole game was pancake the whole defensive line of Green Bay. You know, and for the listeners who's out here who doesn't understand what that is, pancaking means they're blocking them into the ground. That's a pancake, and that's what offensive linemen play for.
Yeah, they're flattening them. You know, the type of thing where a player stands up afterwards and says, man, I'm feeling flatter than day old beer.
Basically, yeah, that's a good example right there. So, you know, yeah. That's what they're doing. So, Green Bay defensive line, this is a challenge for them. This is going to be a challenge for them because if they can muster up the strength to actually man up to the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, who is basically arguably the best offensive line, run offensive line in the NFL, they can win that game because you can't let them big boy you and D-boy you the whole game. Because guess what? If they run that ball on you all night, you're going to wear down. You're not going to be able to tackle Ezekiel Elliott. He's fast. He's strong. And then guess what? You have another fast and strong running back that has been activated after, you know, y'all played them, and that's Darren McFadden, who's run the ball very well the last 2 weeks. Very well. Now, I agree with you about Dak Prescott. He's a rookie. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He has 4 interceptions on the year, which is great for a rookie. And
very good. That's good for anybody.
He's going to have nerves. It's good for anybody. And he's going to have nerves. He's playing better than I thought, and I'm a Cowboy fan. I thought he would have maybe 12 TDs and 10 interceptions. That's what I thought, okay? He's playing great, but he is going to get – he may get nervous, but the thing that I see from him, he doesn't get rattled. Only time he got rattled is when I seen from what I saw was week one against a great defense with the New York Giants week one, and then we played the New York Giants again in New York. He looked mediocre. He looked like a rookie. Now, if that defense, Green Bay defense, who are missing a lot of their starting corners, a lot of their linebackers, they just got Clay Matthews, they got B.J. Raji and all that stuff. If they can get those guys going and make him look like that, yeah, the Cowboys are going to lose. But I doubt it. Now, nobody's giving the Cowboys a chance. No, nobody is. The Cowboys are underdog in this game, even at home. And you know people who are listening, if you bet, if you're the home team, you get an automatic 3 points. The Cowboys are 4-point underdogs in this game.
I wouldn't even give the Cowboys the underdog status in this game, personally. Packers.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't give the Cowboys the underdog. I would say the Packers are for sure a dog here.
I said a push, Mike. I said a push.
My thing is
a good game. And my go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, finish your thought, though. I'll come in with you.
Yeah, please.
I was just going to say what my score was going to be. I think it's going to be a close game. I think the score is going to be 31-38. Dallas. I do think Aaron Rodgers is going to get his chances, and he's going to throw passes to Cobb and Adams. That's what I think. He's going to get Cook involved. He's going to try to get the tight end involved. You know, that's what I think. Even though, you know, Jordy Nelson. If people didn't notice, when Jordy Nelson went out in wild card round versus the Giants, that's when Green Bay started moving the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a good point. But here's the way I said, there's two sides of this game to consider. There's the hype side, and then there's the fact side. On the hype side, you know, the NFL is a quarterback-driven league, right?
And
the Green Bay Packers come in as the hottest team. Whether the best team or not, we'll find out. But they're coming as the hottest team, no question about it. And the hottest quarterback coming in, who just happens to be named Aaron Rodgers, who is considered by many people to be the best quarterback in football right now, or at least is in the discussion. That's the hype side of it. And a lot of people ride the hot hand because we've seen in the NFL playoffs over and over again that if you could get hot at the right time in these one-game playoffs, you can ride that hot streak all the way to a Super Bowl victory. We have seen it before. Heck, the Packers were that team back in 2010 when they took out the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl behind Aaron Rodgers, but also behind the incredible running by James Starks, who was big for them. They had that balanced attack going. We go to the facts side of this. Here are the facts. The fact is Dak Prescott may not be in the same class as Aaron Rodgers, but Dak Prescott is a very good quarterback who doesn't make mistakes. That's huge in this game. This game is all about making sure you don't turn the ball over, because if you do, then you are just setting yourself up for disaster. That's number one. Number two fact, and these are how NFL games are won is usually not because of a quarterback. I know that's how the league is driven. I know that's how these games are covered. And this game is being covered from a preview standpoint based on the quarterbacks. And you made a great point, Tay. No one's given the – or is it Brian? I'm not sure. No one is giving the Cowboys a chance. And the reason for that is, and another fact, is that their two best players are rookies. And another unwritten rule, rookies can't succeed in the playoffs. They have to take their lumps. They have to learn their lesson against a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who has been there before. But keep in mind, Aaron Rodgers' playoff runs with the Green Bay Packers, aside for that 2010 run, he's had his failures too in the playoffs time and time again. There's a reason for that. The reason is why most NFL games are won. They're not NFL playoff games are won. Not usually because of the quarterback, but because of two elements. And you could look over just about every box score of every team that wins an NFL playoff game, and there's going to be two things that favor them in that game. One, balance. Running the ball as much as you pass, if not more so. Why? You keep a defense honest that way. And which of these two teams has a better chance of having a balanced offensive attack? I would say the Cowboys do, because they are clearly the superior running team in this game. And Dak Prescott, even though he's not good as Aaron Rodgers, still pretty good. So they're probably going to get good quarterback play too, as long as he doesn't make mistakes, which he generally doesn't. They'll get that balanced attack, and they're not going to need to pass the ball more than they run in all likelihood against a Green Bay defense that you can run on. That's not their strength, and you can pass on them as well. But really, when it comes to running the football, you can run the football on this Green Bay Packer team. They are not a dominant defensive team against the run. So the balance aspect of this game, being able to run as much as you pass, favors the Cowboys. Another thing, another way that football games are won, and it's the least celebrated aspect of football, the trenches, the battle of the trenches, the offensive and the defensive line. Who has a superior offensive line in this game? The Cowboys do. The Packers' offensive line is very good, particularly when Brian Bulaga is healthy to protect Aaron Rodgers' Brian's out. It's a very good offensive line, but it's not quite as good as the Cowboys. And the Cowboys' defensive line, pretty good itself. Not great, but good enough. So if you're going to win the game in the trenches, the Cowboys have a better chance of doing that. If you're going to have a balanced attack, the Cowboys have a chance of doing that. Aaron Rodgers is a whole talk on the Green Bay side. He's the reason why the Packers are in this position as far as all the pregame coverage goes. But football can never be won by one player. This isn't the NBA where a player can carry you to victory. This is the NFL. Everything has got to be working right. And without Jordy Nelson in this game, they can focus in on Randall Cobb. Devontae Adams is going to have to come up big, or Geronimo Allison, who will start in place of Jordy Nelson, is going to have to come up big. But really, Randall Cobb is the guy that they're going to focus on and try to take him away. And the Packers are going to need to run the football. You had a great point, Tay, in that if the Cowboys can get into their extended drives running the football, they keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline. That's their key, is to have sustained drives against a decent Green Bay defense, but not great, and keep Aaron Rodgers on the sideline and just grind that defense into minced meat, like on a man's chest in the city of Miami with the gold chains all over it and the silk shirt in front of it, but I digress. You've got to run the football if you're the Cowboys, but I think the Cowboys can do that because Green Bay will allow them to do that, and that's their strength, and they'll get good quarterback play, and they'll get balanced play, and they will win the battle of the trenches. That's why I firmly believe the Cowboys are going to win this game, and it should be noted, Brian, that I am a Niners fan. Therefore, I am rooting for the Packers in this game because I'd much rather see the Packers move on than the Cowboys do. So I am rooting for the Packers in this game. But looking at this game objectively and knowing what I know about what it takes to have success in the NFL playoffs with a balanced attack and being able to win in the trenches, those two aspects of the game favor the Cowboys, quite frankly. Feel free to respond if you'd like.
It definitely does. I completely agree. And like I said, The intangibles are what's going to change this game. If Dak Prescott comes in nervous, if the Cowboys come in, behind the step from that week off.
It's possible.
That really does affect teams. Some teams, that week off is a godsend. The Packers, I mean, gosh, they had, week four off? They played straight through. They haven't missed a day. So they are sharp as iron right now, okay? They're ready to go. They're ready to play. They want to play. They're in Dallas. It doesn't matter. It's warmer there. They'll play better. So, really, what it comes down to, I understand a balanced attack. Totally agree. Dallas has that over Green Bay right now. Aaron Rodgers is a better quarterback. No question about it. Dak Prescott is not far behind. The fact that he's not throwing interceptions right there means that's a good quarterback. That's what you need your quarterback to do is not make mistakes, get the ball to your receivers. You don't have to make 60, 70-yard throws to be a great quarterback. You have to be somebody that's not throwing interceptions, not throwing bad football. He's doing that. He's got a great running back, great receivers, great line. It's going to be a tough game, no doubt about it. I'm just saying what we have to count on as a Packers fan is the fact that Dallas is not going to be just right. They're not going to be 100%. They're going to be a little behind. Prescott's going to get flustered. He is going to get flustered. They're going to get to him at some point. Green Bay might not have the best defense in the world, but they're going to get to Dak. They're going to get to these guys and create, you know, they're going to create some opportunities, and that's going to be the game. It's going to be quick, or it's going to be close, but it's going to be Green Bay at the end of the game.
We'll find out. I look for it to be a close game, too. I don't think either team runs away and hides with it, because what's funny about this game, also another fact, is that the strength of each team is the weakness of the opposing team, and that the Cowboys are a strong running team. The Packers are not strong against the run, whereas the Packers are strong passing the ball, and the Cowboys are weak against the pass. So that, I think, makes it for a close game. But I think at the end of the day, Dallas will be able to have a more balanced attack and win the battle of the trenches to win the game. I'll say 24-20 Cowboys. Any final words, Tay, on this game before we move on to the next matchup?
Honestly, no. I agree with what both of you said on both sides of the ball, on which how both teams can win and lose the game. I'm still going to stick with the Cowboys' offensive line dominating the Green Bay Packers' defensive line and running their way to victory with a 1-2 punch from Ezekiel Elliott, Darren McFadden, and using the pistol and play action to throw to Dez Bryant and Terrence Williams, and possibly, I hope, get Jason Witten involved as well.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun one. Go to the next game here, and a game that a lot of people think is the dog game of the weekend, and that's the New England Patriots hosting the Houston Texans. You know, some variables in this game. Mike Vrabel is the linebacker's coach for the Texans. He played for Bill Belichick. Bill O'Brien being the head coach, you know, used to work with Bill Belichick, so they kind of know what to expect from a big bad hoodie wearing, no media talking to Bill Belichick coming into this game. We know that the quarterback situation with Brock Osweiler is a tad tenuous because he's been very inconsistent. But we also know that the Texans have a great defense. And is Rob Gronkowski playing in this game, by the way? Is he back or is he still out?
No, he's on IR. He's done for the season.
Oh, he's done for the year. Okay. So given the Texans have the top-rated defense in the NFL coming in, and the Patriots are missing Rob Gronkowski, do you give the Texans any kind of chance to win this game under those circumstances? Let me start with you, Tay.
No, I don't. Why? Because Brock Osweiler has been very under mediocre this season, and you're going up against Tom Brady and the Patriots, who by far has been just an elite team for years now. You're going to have to ride that defense. This is not Oakland from the wild card round who didn't have Derek Carr, who could barely move the ball. This is Tom Brady. I doubt if that defensive line can get to Tom Brady like they did Connor Cook. He's going to make plays. You got better wide receivers. Edelman is not going to drop passes like, you know, Cooper and the crew did in the wild card round to help you out to get off the field on third downs. You got an elite team, and I don't think they have a chance. Now, I'll eat my words, and I'll come on here next week on the show if Houston beats the Patriots. I hate the Patriots. I hope the Patriots lose anytime they play. But being honest and subjective, no. I think it's going to be a game that I'm going to have to turn off and wait till the next game come on. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah.
Ryan, same question to you. Do you give the Texans any kind of chance in this game?
I give them, let me see. I would give them about as good a chance to win the game as I have of getting Tom Brady's wife to notice me.
that's not
a bad thing. No,
wow.
They're not in the same league. It's not a bad thing. They're a good team. They're solid. This quality of team, they're not going to beat the Patriots.
Okay. So I guess you don't give them any kind of chance in this game. And the answer to the question from me is, do I give the Texans any kind of chance against the Patriots coming off a bye week with Bill Belichick being the master of taking advantage of the bye weeks? The answer is an overwhelming and emphatic no. Here's the rule about being a dome team. Never be a dome team and have to leave your dome to play the Patriots in a road playoff game. And that's all I got to say, especially coming off a bye week with Bill Belichick as the head coach. Texans, enjoy the playoff victory that you just got. It's going to have to hold you until next year. I like the Patriots in this game. You know, the matchups, the next two matchups are a little bit more intriguing, I feel like. We're going to go to Seattle. Actually, I got a call on the line here. Let me activate their mic here. Last phone number is up 2425. This is Steve Itzkowitz of the Sport Diehards. Who am I speaking with?
Is this me? Am I on the line?
You are on the line, sir. What's your name?
My name is Adam Perry.
Adam, my buddy Adam, our tax man. Ah, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling into the show, bro. I appreciate it. Did you want to chime in on what we were talking about before as far as the Patriots and the Texans, or did you have a comment on anything?
Yeah. I think the Patriots got this game, man. I don't think Texans got much of a chance, although I was thinking about betting the Texans with the points. They might have a chance to keep the game a little close. I know their defense is pretty good. They might go with a big running game. I was kind of thinking the Texans with the points might be a decent bet.
You know, what also might be a decent bet is the over-under for this game, because the Texans are number one overall defensively. The Patriots were number eight coming into these playoffs. So maybe betting under on the over-under, depending on what it is, might not be a bad bet to make either, because shaping up to be a defensive battle, based on two very good defenses playing outdoors in a cold weather environment that will certainly be in Foxborough. So might want to take a look at that one as well, as far as what the over-under, and gave the possibility of betting the under, because it's a couple of good defenses going up against each other in this game. And the Texans don't have any quarterback play, but the Patriots don't have Gronk. So offensively, points might be tough to come by in this game. So you might want to look at the over-under, too. The next game, I'm trying to find out right now, actually. Hold on just one second. Well, while I'm looking it up here, we're going to get to the next game here to keep things going. The Seattle Seahawks going on the road against the Atlanta Falcons, coming off a bye week. Saying bye week with the Atlanta Falcons almost sounds like sacrilege. But it's actually the case in this game. The Falcons coming through a wet and wild NFC South, to win the NFC South, with Tampa Bay making a move after a tough start and the Saints trying to make a move but getting off to too bad of a start to overcome that, and the Carolina Panthers free-falling more than Tom Petty in the song he sang back in the day. So they are hosting a playoff game against the Seattle Seahawks, a two-time Super Bowl maker in this decade, winning one. Probably should have won the second one, too, had Pete Carroll not gone stupid in the final 5 seconds, but I digress. Let me go ahead and start with you on this one, Brian. Seattle comes in with a reputation of being successful in the playoffs, and Atlanta comes in as kind of an upstart. Who do you like in this game and why?
Well, I got to go with Seattle. They're a good team. They have a very solid defense. Their quarterback does not make that mistakes. He's very good. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's good. They're not going to beat Seattle, though. Period.
Fair enough. So quarterback play and good defense. Tay, what about you?
think that with that game, it's going to come down to what Seattle team shows up. Seattle plays a different game on the road than they do at home. Also, the last few games of the season, they've been allowing a lot of rushing touchdowns. Case in point, David Johnson had 3 touchdowns in Seattle versus them. Mike Zimmer was running the ball against Seattle's defense in Seattle, but the Lions just stopped running the ball for some stupid reason. So my thing is this. If Tevon Coleman and Devontae Freeman can run the ball effectively versus the Seattle defense, along with that passing game from Matty Ice going to Julio Jones, Talia Gabriel, and Mohamed Sanu, they're going to win that game. I don't believe nothing in Seattle's offense. None whatsoever. They don't even get Jimmy Graham involved. And Jimmy Graham is a weapon. Well, he was a weapon when he was with the Saints. I guess Drew Brees knew how to use him. But Seattle, it's his 3rd year there. They don't know how to use him. I'm going with Atlanta. I think in that dome, Atlanta finally doesn't choke and win a playoff game and go to the NFC Championship game.
Adam, what about you? How do you see this game going?
I'm going to have to agree with that last lady. I think Atlanta's got this game. I just I don't see Seattle doing it. I think Atlanta's a superior team this year. Seattle has not looked impressive to me at all this year. I think they've gotten a lot weaker. And Atlanta's been a good team. They've got a nice, solid offense, good running game, good passing game. I think they take this one. I think they cover the points. I think this is going to be the highest scoring game of the week.
You know, my thing is this. If this game was in Seattle, it would be a really easy pick to make. But it's in the Georgia Dome, in a dome with Atlanta having an offense just filled with guys that can run, and Matty Ice having a year in which he is throwing bullet after bullet after bullet has been incredibly accurate, and I think he's going to be the MVP. I think he should be the MVP, actually. He's just had an incredible year. And then you have Vic Beasley Jr. on the other side that can make things a little uncomfortable for Russell Wilson. And going up against a offensive line for Seattle that, quite frankly, is the worst in the playoffs right now, the worst of all of these teams. I talked about it before, winning games in the trenches, and I think Atlanta has a better chance to do that because I just don't like Seattle's offensive line at all. I don't. It was good last week, but this is a whole different deal going on the road in a hostile environment against a team that has got a pretty good pass rush led by Vic Beasley Jr. And also the fact that defensively you can score points on the Seattle, because Seattle's whole calling card is defense. But there's a key member of their defense that they're missing, the backbone of the Legion of Boom, and that's Earl Thomas III. He's not back there to protect Richard Sherman, who I think is a pretty good cornerback. He's not as great as people might think he is. I think he benefits from playing in the Legion of Boom system, particularly when Earl Thomas is back there to protect him. That's not going to be the case in this game, going up against maybe the most prolific passing offense in the NFL right now, playing on their home field, by the way, in the Georgia Dome. So I think they could throw the ball on the Falcons. I think they can run it with Devontae Freeman and keep in mind that they lost Bruce Irwin as free agency. He went to the Raiders. So their front seven, still good, not quite as good as it could be. And their secondary is compromised with the loss of Earl Thomas. And offensively, a mediocre offensive line. And who are the playmakers? Outside of Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, after busting out at the end of the season before last, he hasn't been quite as good this year. And do you think Thomas Rawls is going to be able to run for another 160 yards back-to-back, especially playing on the road? I don't see that. They're going to need to run the football, though, to keep that Atlanta offense on the sideline, because that's exactly where you want them to be, getting cold and not throwing bullets down the field that they're going to do. So I like Atlanta in this game just because I don't think Seattle's offensive line stacks up enough. But I think defensively you could throw the football on them because Earl Thomas is not available to back up Richard Sherman. So that's the way I see this game.
I thought, yeah, I do. I agree with that, with the Earl Thomas thing, because statistically, since Earl Thomas got hurt, unfortunately, they have not been able to stop a run. Or when they're in, you know, in their defensive schemes, they can't audible when the offense audible. They have significantly dropped that pass defense and rush defense. So,
and that's another thing.
Need to can't
you know, Matt Ryan threw touch.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying they're leaving Cam Chancellor in the backfield by himself. He doesn't have that elite help from a, you know, from the strong safety position to help him. So they're struggling right now. Yeah, you have Richard Sherman. He's going to shut down his side of the field. But what about the other side? What about when they beat the corner and they got to get to the safety? They're exposed. I still stand that Atlanta's going to win this game.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, but with Cam Chancellor is like to cheat toward the line. You know, he's a safety that plays like a linebacker. He's 230 pounds. He likes to cheat toward the line and help out in the running game.
Oh, yeah.
Can he really afford to
right.
do that in this particular game? Or do they need to keep him back here to make sure that they don't get beat over the top? And I think that could open things up for the running game, because when Cam Chancellor can cheat in using his massive size as a safety to assist with the running game, he's that much more effective. But I don't know if they could. I don't know if they could afford to have him do that in this particular game, which could open things up for the Atlanta running game. And if that happens, imagine how much easier it's going to be for them to complete the passes down the field against a secondary that again is compromised without old Thomas. So another reason why I like Atlanta in this game is Cam Chancellor. Maybe he can't do what he usually likes to do. That's cheese towards the line, help with the running game, and then go back, you know, when needed to defend against the pass in an obvious passing situation.
I think that too. He's going to have to recognize when they're running and come up to help stop the run, because I don't, you know, yet Cliff Avril, he's having an awesome year. You know, he's got over 100 tackles. He got a lot of pressures. But his thing is, his Achilles heel is that he has a lot of penalties for encouragement.
Michael Bennett.
That's the best. Avril and Bennett.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah.
They're great.
Oh, yeah.
They're great. But
Chancellor
has to come
king.
Up, and he's going to have to help them. But me, if I was the coach, I would say this. Do as you see fit as the game flows. You know, that's what I would say if I was to talk to Chancellor.
It's going to be a good game. You know, you got a team known for defense versus a team known for offense playing at home coming off a bye, so it should be a pretty good game. And keep in mind that, when the Atlanta Falcons, 4 years ago lost to the 49ers in the NFC Championship game, they beat the Seattle Seahawks team. You know, with two game-winning drives in the final minute, Seattle got theirs, and then Matt Ryan got it back with 55 seconds and led Atlanta down the field, you know, to a winning touchdown drive to make the NFC Championship game to lose to the Niners. This is a rematch of Atlanta and Seattle in Atlanta in the second round after meeting with each other 5 years ago in the, or I'm sorry, 4 years ago in the NFC divisional round when Matt Ryan and the Falcons were able to mount a last-minute drive to beat the upset-minded Seattle Seahawks before they made a couple of Super Bowls back-to-back. So it should be even more interesting how these teams, but the teams look a little different now than they did several years ago, that's for sure. Especially with Seattle and the injuries that they've had. So we'll see what happens. The next game, and this might be the most intriguing game of them all because it is so hard to call. The Kansas City Chiefs playing at Arrowhead Stadium, arguably the loudest stadium in the NFL or Central League. I'd say it's Arrowhead because I think a lot of the noise at Central League Field is more manufactured than robots. Because it could be robots making that noise. So Arrowhead Stadium is the tailgate noisy stadium destination of the U.S. of A. And they are hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers, the six-time Super Bowl-winning Pittsburgh Steelers, and the triumvirate of Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown against one of the best defenses that hopefully will have all their personnel available, because I looked at the injury report, but I'll talk about that in a second. You want to talk about teams with contrasting styles, the Chiefs being a defensive-oriented team, Obviously, the Steelers being known as maybe the most explosive offense in the AFC, out of the Falcons in the NFC. Let me start with you on this one, Adam. How do you see this game going between the Chiefs and the Steelers? Who do you like and why?
You know what? I actually like the Chiefs in this one. It's a tough call, but I think the Chiefs have been looking real strong this year. I can't really give you very, very much good reason on why I picked them. It's just kind of a gut feeling I got. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. That's pretty much all I got to say on this one. Can you put my phone on silence, though? I'm about to pick up an Uber guy right about 1 minute.
You got it, Adam. Hey, thanks for coming on here and for discussing a little football with us. I'll put you on mute and enjoy the rest of the show. All right, so let me go ahead and go to you, Brian. How do you see this going? Who do you like?
I'm rooting this time. One for the Chiefs. I think this is going to be.
Brian, can you hear me?
They're one of my favorite teams.
Brian, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Speak up a little bit because I can barely hear you. I think Brian's having a little bit difficulty right now. Taylor, let me ask you, how do you think this game is going to go?
Well, I'm glad you asked about this game because I can't wait to watch this game. Let me break it down for y'all. Kansas City has been on a run, but I have been watching a lot of Andy Reid teams for years, being a fan of the NFC East. They're going to be a beast in the season. They're going to win a few playoff games, but they're going to eventually, as I like to say, choke. I like what they're doing right now. They have their own DeSean Jackson with Tyreek Hill. They have a dink and dunk Alex Smith, who I think is serviceable. West. And the rest of the running back crew, they're not running the ball as effectively right now. But I'm going to put my money on the Pittsburgh Steelers, and here's why. You have Le'Veon Bell, who's one of the most patient running backs in the game. He's going to wait and not make that one cut, but he's a two-cut running back. And there's not that many running backs in the league that's like that. You have Antonio Brown, who's almost uncoverable. He's going to be going up against Marcus Peters. Marcus Peters is great. He's in his second year, but I think Antonio Brown will get the best of him. They got Big Ben. Big Ben hurt his foot last game, which they say. I don't know, but I still think that he's a gunslinger, and he's going to get the ball to who they need. The X factor is who he's going to go to when they try to double-team Antonio Brown. It's going to be Eli Rogers. It's going to be Jesse James. Those guys are going to be the key factors to help them move the ball when those other big guys are double-teamed. And also, when they line up Le'Veon Bell, they line him up as a wide receiver. He can run a few routes in that route tree better than any other running back in this league. I'm just saying. And he's hard to bring down. The Kansas City Chiefs, they're banged up. Justin Houston, he's still hurt. Tamba Ali, they're having problems. I think that it's going to be a close game. They moved it back because of the weather. Supposed to be icy conditions or something like that, what I read from the Kansas City News. But I got Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh used to play in the cold. Kansas City is, too, at this time of the year. But I'm taking Pittsburgh with the gunslinger and the weapons on offense. Now, Pittsburgh defense, they're a little bit of ho-hum to me. If they're kind of like the bend, don't break type of defense. Now, if they don't break, that'll help. But they have to contain Tyreek Hill, who's also – he's every game he's broke for at least a 70 to 60-yard run for a touchdown. I think they can contain everybody else, especially Travis Kelce.
Brian, let me go and bring you back in here because I could barely hear you before. How do you see – who do you like in this game and why?
Well, I was saying, if you didn't hear me earlier, I was
There's some noise that's coming a little bit louder than you are, so maybe you want to move up or increase the volume on your phone. So.
No, I have nothing in my background. I'm in a dead room here.
Now you're coming in. Good. That's good. Go ahead.
All right. Like I said, I'm really, really rooting Kansas City here. I like Kansas City. I like Alex Smith. I like what they're doing. I just don't think they're going to beat Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh, they're coming in. They've got, what, 8 wins in a row. They've got, you know, Brown, Roethlisberger. I don't see them beating that. I just don't. I'm sad about it, even though I like Antonio Brown. I don't really like Big Ben, not a fan, but I love Antonio Brown. I like what he does. I think Pittsburgh's going to win here, and I just don't see Kansas City being able to stop them.
You know, the one, and I understand Pittsburgh being a pick and being a pick of a lot of people in this game because, you know, that's how explosive they are offensively and people not trusting Alex Smith, you know, to make those big plays. But I'm going to kind of go against the grain here. And I'm going to pick Kansas City to win this game because Tyreek Hill and what he has brought to this offense, I think, is as I mentioned, that they have been lacking, and that's a guy that can beat the top off the defense. And that's Tyreek Hill. He can get the ball down the field and make things happen with his speed. Travis Kelce has been an incredible tight end, and, you know, in the absence of Gronk, maybe the best tight end in football right now. And Alex Smith has opened it up a little bit, throwing the ball down the field a little bit more than he normally would. He doesn't make turnovers either. He generally avoids those. So the Chiefs are not going to turn the ball over, and they are playing at home. That can't be understood in arguably the noisiest environment in the NFL. So Pittsburgh might have a hard time hearing the calls from Ben Roethlisberger playing in this atmosphere. But also there's another. This is my really compelling stat. Andy Reid, you know, I talked about Bill Belichick before and what he's able to accomplish when he has a bye week available to him. Andy Reid is in the same class. Do you know that his record in a game coming off a bye week is 16-2 throughout his coaching career? If there's a head coach out there that maximizes a bye week successfully, it's Andy Reid. And that's going to show up in this game at some point in terms of how well prepared the Chiefs are going to come in this game. Now, the one thing with the Chiefs to be concerned about is that Eric Berry, Tom Bahaly, and Justin Houston have injuries right now, and some of them have gone through full practice, and some of them left practice, some of them did not practice. You're going to need those guys in this game because Kansas City's whole calling card is defense and having the offense play off of that and making big plays with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. But with a bye week that the Kansas City Chiefs have had, with Andy Reid being as good as it gets in maximizing that, that's why I like the Chiefs in this game, combined with the fact that they have home field advantage, I think is really going to help them. If Pittsburgh wins this game, it would not surprise me in the least. But I think Kansas City can make plays offensively against the Pittsburgh defense, in which their secondary is not that great. Can run on Pittsburgh as well. They have a pretty good front seven, but at the end of the day, Pittsburgh's defense is not something that is going to be particularly scary, not compared to a team like the Texans or the Cardinals or the Seahawks, for that matter, when they're healthy. And I think just the bye week aspect of this game with Andy Reid is very, very compelling. And actually, I've got a phone call on the line here. Last phone numbers of 6481. This is Steve Itzkowitz of the Sport Diehards. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, this is Jimmy from Stay Out of My Crease.
Stay Out of My Crease. Yes.
Hey.
Yes,
what's going on, Jimmy? Welcome.
Not too much.
Jimmy's another member of the Radio AFS family. Hosts a show with Kim Dunning called Stay Out of My Crease, which is a hockey show. Welcome, sir. Would you like to chime in on what we've been talking about?
To listen to your football show, and it sounds like the Kansas City game might turn into a hockey game with all the ice that's supposed to be there on the field.
It very well could.
Well, you know, I was listening to what you said, and, you know, I can totally agree with your takes on both Kansas City and Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh's no stranger to cold weather and ice and snow or whatever. I just think that right now with them, the way they're playing, I don't see them going into Kansas City and losing. I don't really see them losing. They have all three Bs together for the first time in, like, forever. And, I mean, they're just running on all cylinders right now. You know, it doesn't really matter if – yeah. So, I mean, Roethlisberger could go out there in, you know, in a boot or whatever, or a cast or a crutch or whatever. But he's still going to extend the play, and he's still going to, you know, play better than most. And then, you know, Brown – I mean, if he's got the advantage of he can cut and they can't cover him, I don't know. I don't see how Kansas City is going to beat them. But at the same token, I'd like for Kansas City to beat them because I don't like Pittsburgh. So.
Yeah. I think if New England gets together with Pittsburgh in the NFC Championship game, that would be, you know, a lot of media members will make picks based on the desired matchup they want to see for ratings purposes. So I know most media people are going to be hoping that New England and Pittsburgh get the job done to face each other in the NFC Championship game. Then if Atlanta goes up against, what's the other team in the Dallas, you know, that might be a fun game to watch. Or actually Dallas-Seattle would probably be pretty compelling television as well. We'll see, or Green Bay. It's hard, like I said, it's hard to argue against Pittsburgh. You know, your points are all well taken, Jimmy, about they're familiar with cold weather and, you know, they're coming in hot with the killer bees. We'll see. It's, you know, what's interesting about a lot of these matchups is that one team has one strength and the opposing team has the exact opposite strength, which usually makes for really, really good games. And usually the divisional round playoff games are the best playoff games, that there are. And I'm sure that will be the case this weekend. We only have 5 minutes left to go. Actually, about 4 minutes left to go. I want to give a chance to each of you to kind of preview your shows briefly. Before we wrap up here, as I appreciate all of you coming on, I'll start with you. I'll start with you, Tay, since you were the first one on. Tell us about the Sports Elite. Sports Elite, when you come to Radio AFS, and what people can look forward to.
All right, the first week in April, I am migrating over to the Radio AFS team. My show, Sports Elite, is a debate show. We have two people come on every week, and we debate any sports topics. You know, if you want to submit a topic, we have, you know, debate it, you know, sportseliteshow@gmail.com. You can submit that question. And also we have a blog to go along with it and a Facebook group. So make sure y'all follow us. Type in your Facebook browser, Sports Elite, and go ahead and join our group and continue on with the debates every Thursday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Sounds good. And by the way, I think I owe you an apology because I think I called you sir before, but I believe you're a ma'am. Is that correct?
That is correct, and
okay, I apologize. I apologize for that. I saw your picture. I'm like, boy, don't I feel like an idiot? I need to get a crowbar and pry my foot out of my mouth. So I apologize.
Jacob says there's nothing but a chicken wing, so it's all good. We good.
Appreciate that. looking forward to your show, a debate show. That should be fun. Brian, of the Combat Sports Show, tell us a little bit about your show for the Radio AFS Network.
Well, we do our show. We cover MMA, boxing, kickboxing, wrestling, anything combat related. We have fun with it. We talk old school, new school, anything we really want to talk about. Sometimes, you know, we get into movies, TV, whatever. But we try and keep it pretty, just have a good time. People could call and talk about some of their favorite, like that.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like the people that listen to your show by the end of it will be nice and bloodied and ready for combat. So that should be
right.
That's a very good show concept here, and looking forward to listening to it, especially to bone up on MMA stuff. So welcome to the network, and thank you very much for contributing to the Sport Diehards tonight. Jimmy, we have about 90 seconds here, so be brief. Your particular show, Stay Out of My Crease with Kim Dunning.
Yeah.
I love the title, and tell us a little bit about your show.
Well, we talk about hockey, but we don't just focus on the NHL. We talk a lot of college hockey. We talk a lot of juniors hockey. We talk a lot of college hockey, a lot of college men and women's hockey. And, you know, we pretty much cover all, you know, pretty much cover all of the hockey that's out there. So, you know, I mean, we even covered the sled hockey tournament, you know. So we don't just cover the NHL, but we cover the feeder sports to the NHL, which is sometimes more interesting than the actual pro game. So.
Sure. Every Wednesday, right?
Every Wednesday at, I think we start 10 Eastern.
Well, welcome to the network, and thank you very much for contributing to the show, guys. Give me your feedback on the conversation that we have said, and let me know what you thought of the show, and thank you very much. I want to close out the show here with a response to the Holly Weed controversy. That's not a controversy or insulting. That's truth in advertising, because Holly Weed is all about its acting and its drugs, and I'll leave it at that. My name is Steve Itzkowitz of the Sport Diehards. We'll be back on Monday to look back on NFL Divisional Card Weekend and then look ahead to the conference championships. My name is Steve Itzkowitz. For Tay Holloway, Brian Zamora, Jimmy, and my buddy Adam Perry, thank you very much for listening. We do this because sports is everything. Enjoy the weekend, everybody, and thank you very much for listening.